Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Thanks for joining us once again. Our MotorWeek podcast number 60 is now underway. I am John Davis, and joining me around our unusually shaped table here in Studio C, it's almost shaped like a grill ornament, is our road test producer and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson.
Also unusually shaped as well.
And fresh from back from being over the edge is our reporter, Stephen Jupnik.
Hello.
And our staff writer, Brandon Holthouse.
That's me.
Okay, we're going to have our lightning round, and we'll get into our MotorWeek mailbag as we always do. But first, some new vehicles that have passed through our MotorWeek portals in the last few weeks. And we're going to start with one of the most delicious cars that you could ever lay your hands on, and that is the Ferrari 458 Italia. Having said just the name, you can sit and savor that, but let's get into the specifics. Brian Robinson.
Yes.
What about this Ferrari? Did it make you drool, or is it just another prancing horse?
No, every time you think you've driven a Ferrari, then you drive another one, and just the whole experience, the sound, the feel, even the smell. I mean, it's truly unique, and it's a rare treat. 458 Italia is beautiful looking. It's kind of got some Dino-esque elements to it.
Sure does.
And it looks awesome. The big thing with all Ferraris are always the engine, and this one's got 562 horsepower from a 4.5 liter V8 engine, which is a naturally aspirated record of horsepower per liter. And it screams, no doubt about it.
You know, it's interesting. They were really one of the first ones to go to an automatic clutched manual gearbox. So effectively, you have an automatic, and they made a lot of huge improvements in the last couple of years. I mean, this one's really the smoothest one I think we've seen.
I don't know if I would agree with that. It is better, but it's still awesome on the track. No one will deny
very,
that.
Very, very quick.
But on the street, it's still a little herky-jerky for street use, especially if you're just tooling around town.
It's kind of sad that Ferrari can't really find a market in this country for manual transmissions. I mean, you would think they would be the last. They still sell them, but they sell very few of them.
Well, just by calling their gearbox the F1 gearbox and knowing that's what's in their race cars, that's what everybody wants.
Yeah, and everybody can drive it. You don't have any special talent. Gentlemen, other comments?
Yeah, I agree. You turn it on, or really just
sit in the car and just listen to it.
Right, you just listen to it. And I drove it around here, and maybe call me crazy, but after about maybe a half hour of driving it, people were looking at me, and I almost forgot that I was driving a Ferrari.
Well, that's how much more civilized their cars have become in the last 10 years,
and that's what I was, I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing. That I almost forgot that.
Oh, I think it's a good thing.
It was, and that's
I mean, gone are the days when you bought a Ferrari and had to have your somebody trail behind you in another car in case you broke down. I think they've come a long way since then.
It's definitely I think the steering wheel is pretty unique. Almost everything in the car is controlled, including the blinkers, which are just push button.
Let's talk about that. Push button blinkers.
I loved
which
it.
I'm not sure we had seen before. I don't think so.
No.
Comments on this, Brandon?
That was definitely unique. It's something I had never seen before. It took a little getting used to, but it's a really nice feature. And I mean, it's different.
Steven liked it.
Yeah. Do you really need to use turn signals when you're driving a Ferrari?
No, and that was the thing. Yeah. You almost forgot to put it on. Sometimes you were looking around for it, but it was neat.
Let's boil this down though. If you were blindfolded in the car, and let's even say you had earplugs in the car, does it drive like you would expect a supercar to drive? Is it super to drive?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It just feels like you're in a race car, a very comfortable one. But I haven't tried the driving blindfolded yet.
No, let's not do that.
I have
not
at all a few times. That's a similar experience.
Won't say figure of speech, but close. All right. Now, I hate to bring you all down, but, we do have to be practical. We do try and test everything that's out there. So our second car that we're going to talk about on this podcast is the Hyundai Accent. Let me set the stage for anyone that hasn't been keeping up. Hyundai's been making a huge splash with their new sedans, very swoopy looking, very high quality interiors. First the Hyundai Accent, then the Hyundai Elantra, which was the compact, and now the subcompact Hyundai Accent. Brandon Holdhouse, you were the first one on our staff. They got to drive the car when it showed up here. Your first impressions?
It's different than the Elantra. I drove the Elantra a few months ago, and I really did like that car. But the Accent, it's very noisy to drive.
A lot of road noise.
There's a lot of road noise, and it's almost to the point where your radio's got to be on full blast to actually hear it. It's got a nice exterior styling. I really did enjoy that. I do like that swoopy look that Hyundai's mm-hmm. giving everything. But I couldn't get over that road noise. There was just so much of it.
It's clear that I actually found that with the compact Elantra. I thought it was considerably noisier than the Sonata, which is a fabulous car. And this one's a little bit noisier. On the other hand, there was something about the interior materials on this one that I actually liked better mm-hmm. than the Elantra. And I think it was the Accent. They used a lot more – seemed like they used more piano black. They had a better blend between the lights and darks. The dash covering material looked quite expensive. And then I look at some of the cars it's going to compete against, like the Focus and the Chevy Cruze, which also have very high-quality interiors. And I say, okay, it looks pretty reasonable there.
Yeah, it's a reasonable car to drive. The powertrain was pretty smooth.
And didn't get buzzy.
Yeah,
I
was pretty impressed with that. And I drove it for quite a while, and I got 34-plus miles a gallon without even trying. So,
and it supposedly it has a highway fuel economy rating of 40 with right. the automatic or manual. But people get hung up on that. 34 is probably about right for everyday driving.
Yeah, it's interior, I agree, for the most part. It's nice. You still... You know, you don't forget you're in a subcompact, inexpensive mm-hmm. car, but fairly pleasant.
Yeah. Anything, Stephen?
Yeah, I was driving this out in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. and it was interesting.
Is this before or after you lost your shirt?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it was interesting the difference of driving in the city with a manual and then driving on the highway. You could tell that it's a fun car to drive, but, you know, I think it's
a subcompact, though.
It's definitely, yeah.
It's not meant to be a sporty car, even though it looks pretty good.
And that's the thing. I think people who even just look at it, you're like, okay. You know, you don't know what to think of it. And I got in and I liked it.
Is it a reasonable commuter car, guys?
Absolutely.
I think so. Yeah. And I think the rear seat also is a lot of room in the rear seat, more room than I've seen in – a lot of the cars.
And a pretty good size trunk.
It's a little more pricey than I thought. I think it starts around 13.
Yeah.
You know, so they're no longer one of the cheaper cars in the segment. But
Well, that's a great segue to our next car, which is the cheapest car
on purpose.
In the segment. I know
that.
You did. That was very clever.
That's a softball.
You're in television and broadcasting?
Very nice.
Nissan Versa, which has gotten larger, second generation, and it is the least expensive car.
Yeah, most people wouldn't guess that a Nissan would do that, but.
No. Comments on that, because it's a direct competitor to the Accent.
It is. It starts at just over $10,000. Not that they'll sell very many of that version. Probably very few. But it's, you know, the most expensive car available, and for the most part, it feels like it and acts like it. The interior is just one big piece of injection molded plastic. But it's very – the seats are very comfortable. The rear seat room is huge. Trunk is huge.
There's a lot of space inside.
To the point where, you know, you could – you know, it's more of a family car than, you know, not just a high school student or off to college. But, you know, the price is good. The powertrain is very buzzy with the CVT mm-hmm. transmission. Not super powerful. But for the price – I think it's right.
I mean, when you're looking at a couple of grand less than, say, something like the Accent or a Focus or even a Fiesta, there's certainly a market for that.
And this is just the sedan that's all new for 12. The hatchback is still the same for another probably year or so. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get quite as good fuel economy as the others, the Accent, and pretty much all the segment. And I went on the press event and I'm talking to the engineers about that, and they were pretty frank. You know, the price point was their big goal, and to spend the extra money to get another highway mile per gallon or two that most people probably will never even see just wasn't worth, you know, them spending the additional money into, you know, getting more fuel economy out of the engines. So
Brandon, do you like the look of it better? It's a little not quite as boxy as it was before.
It's definitely not as boxy. It does have a very nice look. This is something I think would appeal to, you know, someone in their younger 20s. I think it's good for somebody who's just getting out of college, maybe going to get their first job. So I think this is a nice car for that. There were little things on the interior that people were a little offset about, like not having a vanity mirror or something on mm-hmm. the driver's side. But other than that, I think it's a good car to drive right after college. I mean, it's perfect to start a family in too. It's got enough room.
Boy, it's a lot of exciting cars in the subcompact and compact market. Just lots of competition.
It's an important segment right now,
and going to be bigger. I mean, there are a lot of people think that compact cars will actually be more popular than mid-sized cars in a couple of years.
Well, they have a lot more room. They're almost, you know,
they're almost mid-sized.
Yeah, same amount of room the mid-sized cars had 5 to 10 years ago, and most brands are also bringing down all the technology. So you're really not sacrificing anything by moving down.
Steven, you're a young family man.
Yeah, I think Brian's point, or the engineer's point, was exactly right. Is for however much Nissan's going to spend, or a family's going to spend, or a person's going to spend to get maybe a mile or two more per highway or city, $10,000, you know, or a couple thousand dollars more, you just can't beat that.
For the car. I mean, someone like yourself, you've got two baby seats that yes. you have to worry about at all times.
Yeah, we're
so
not
you're looking for a nice broad back seat.
Yeah, we had a Santa Fe and we got rid of that and got a minivan. So that's right there. I don't think the Versa is right for someone with small
but
kids.
But what if you lived in the city?
I lived in the city, possibly. Mm. But still, I don't think
it's
that
a little small.
It's you. A little small for infant carriers. Let's just put it that way.
All right, let's move on now to our lightning round, where our Motor Week panelists have the opportunity to share their opinions, which they always have lots of, on topics that are making the headlines. We have a 2-minute debate, and when we get to that time limit, you will hear the bell from Michelle. Gee, that rhymes. Here is, speaking of brands and speaking of bringing technology into the issue, Lincoln. That fabled brand is revamping its entire lineup over the next couple of years. They've announced that they have 7 new or vastly improved vehicles on the way. What do you think the luxury brand Lincoln has to do to really restore its prominence and maybe even, let's go one step further, become more than just a quote-unquote American luxury brand? Who would like to start?
I don't think their image is really that bad a shape. I mean, most people still look at them pretty highly. But I think what they need to do to improve it is just make their products more different than Ford. They really don't, especially like the Edge and the MKX, and they really don't stand apart that differently other than a bigger grill.
They just look like a different grill on a Ford with a little fancier interior.
And they need to do something with the Navigator. I mean, as much as everyone wants to hate on big SUVs, it's a good way to make a big splash in a hurry, and you know it can be a crossover. That's fine, whatever. But you know, get rid of the MKT, which is one of the most hideous looking vehicles on the road. Put out a new Navigator and get it. You know, get some famous people driving it. And,
you don't like to be seen driving a Hearst?
I'm sure at some point I will be.
Well,
maybe not driving
for a long time. Yeah, I'm not. I mean, I like their styling harkens back to some of their glory days back pre-World War II, but I think they've just gone overboard with that winged grill. I, too, agree with you. You know, they've got to stop using gauge packages and switch gear that comes right out of a Ford-branded product. It took Cadillac 12 years to finally make that kind of transition. It'll probably take Lincoln that long, too.
Now, this was a pretty popular question on our social media sites, and surprisingly, Ford actually responded to us on Twitter, really? Saying that you know, I guess the way that we phrased the question was kind of kind to them, because most of the responses were just get rid of it, just get you know, a lot of people were saying do what Cadillac did. It's exactly what mm-hmm. you just said. You know, revamp the brand and
takes a long time,
right? And put out products that don't look exactly like Ford. That was the response on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, that's exactly. Lincoln is kind of like everybody else in revamping their lineup, and they do have good styling. And if they want to keep that retro kind of look, they need to be able to mix that retro with the modern day needs that everybody else has.
Very good. go around, everyone. Thank you very much. And that's, you know, you don't realize the car companies these days are always watching all the social media because they're keying a lot of their future plans off of what they see.
Yeah, they won't answer my phone calls, but yeah, they'll respond to Twitter.
They're on Twitter and Facebook.
You got to tweet to them.
Yeah, really. Would really love to drive your new car.
All right, moving on. It's, for those of you that are not socially network challenged, our MotorWeek mailbag, and actually this was probably an email. Do you have any advice? This is coming from Chakan. I hope I have not butchered your name, Chakan. Do you have any advice on shopping for a new or used car or truck that will last for well over 100,000 miles? Okay. And a few, about 10, 20 years ago, we might have said no, but now we don't.
I'll say no because just about anything you buy with even the cursory of maintenance will last you more than 100,000 miles. So I don't even know.
I mean, it's totally reasonable now to expect to get 150,000 miles out of your car without any significant major, you know, repairs. And 300,000 is not even an issue. However, having said that, any other advice?
I would just say do your research before going and looking at a car. Find out whatever you can. If it is used, figure out any information you can about what it was in before. Make sure it wasn't in an accident or what other work it's had done. If it's something new, go to the internet, go to social media and see what people are saying about these new cars.
And look at some of the traditional things like the J.D. Power quality polls. They do several of them a year. Consumer Reports is always a good place to go for used cars to see what their owners have reported. Stephen?
I think just like exactly what Brandon said, do research. But if you look at even the warranties, Hyundai's warranty goes up to 100,000 miles.
For the engine.
For the engine, yeah.
The powertrain.
So if that's what you're really most concerned about, Hyundai. You know,
Hyundai, Kia, there's a half a dozen brands that give you, including General Motors, that give you a 100,000 mile warranty for powertrain.
General Motors has started.
However, with that said, if you are also interested in that, once you get your best deal, then it's time to probably start talking to the dealer about an extended warranty that can give you a lot more protection. But just be careful. That's something that they make a lot of profit on. So make sure make sure they give you a very good price.
I was going to say for the extended warranty, and I know a lot of outside companies are actually better for that rather than going through the dealership.
That's debatable. And the only reason I'm picking a fight with you on that one is that a lot of the – well, I'm not picking a fight.
Gloves are off. Come on.
Gloves are off. Just remember that if the dealer sells you a warranty that's backed by the company that made the car – you can get that warranty honored at dealers across the country, where if you've got an outside warranty, often you have to pay out of pocket and then get the money back. So just be aware of what kind. There's nothing wrong with them. They're fine, but there are two different animals.
Can I add a sidebar?
Sure.
We were talking about the Hyundai 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. And I was just in South Korea a few weeks ago and meeting with a lot of Hyundai's people, and when they originally came out with that warranty, that they had a lot of reliability problems,
right?
And that was to get people to buy the cars, basically. You know, hey,
just
you don't
like
have anything
Chrysler
to worry about.
Did many years ago.
You don't have anything to worry about. We'll take care of it. And now that their cars have become a lot more reliable, and people really aren't even using the warranty, it was asked whether they would keep it or whether they would go away.
Yeah.
And their response was that they would keep it just because it's a big selling point.
Absolutely.
People, you know. They're between Hyundai or Kia and some other vehicle, and you know they can always throw that trump card down that they've got that big warranty. So
that's exactly what Chrysler did back in the 80s. That's it helped them stick around, and we've seen – and General Motors, for that matter, has done it in the last decade. So, yeah, very good. I hope that, Jacon, that answers your question. Be smart. Do your research. But just about anything out there will give you good reliability for these days. I want to thank our panelists around our table today. This has been MotorWeek's podcast number 60. Thank you very much, Brian Robinson.
My pleasure, John.
And Stephen Chupnik.
Thank you.
And Brandon Holthouse.
Thank you.
I'd like to also thank our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, for making us come through loud and clear. Our podcast creator, Bill's his brother, Bob Mixter, whose idea spawned these podcasts some 60 editions ago. And to our producer, Michelle Parker. the lady with the bell. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you for listening to our podcast, and be sure to catch Motor Week not only on your local public television station, but also if you have HD service, be sure to check us out on Discovery's HD Theater, soon to be rebadged as Velocity. Until next time, I'm John Davis. Thanks very much for watching and listening to Motor Week.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at MotorWeek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.